Jimmy D and the Wolf.
Greetings, Earthlings. How we doing, man?
I'm out of breath because I just ran downstairs to get a hat.
You must have made good time back to Tennessee.
Yes, I did. No incidents. Yeah, I was just up in Indiana with Jimmy earlier today. Made it back to Nashville. So I have an idea of what we can. Well, today the big news in all the news channels is Derek Chauvin was, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but yeah, they kneeled on George Floyd's neck for 9 minutes, was convicted on all three counts. So.
Yeah. Of course, it's a good thing. He had to be convicted, but I just get the sinking feeling of like, would he have been, you know, if it wouldn't have been caught on film and turned into as big of a thing as it was?
Well, there is a dialogue that talks that says that it was, the fix was in. You know, if you get on some conservative sites, they're saying the fix was in, because the uprising, if he was not convicted, would have been pretty severe. So, you know, there's two sides to the opinions. I read an article, which I didn't realize, that there was a police officer, a retired police officer, who testified on behalf of the defense from California, who testified that he felt that his pressure on the neck was within police protocol, and somebody put the head of a pig on the doorstep of where he used to live, but he hadn't lived there in a long time, and smeared blood on the wall, I guess, or something. And so they assume or guess that maybe they were trying to target him, but he hadn't lived there in a while. So a little scary. I mean, you wake up and there's a severed pig head on your front step, you know, makes you wonder. It would make you wonder a little bit. Blood smear, but it wasn't his home. It was somebody else living there. So they didn't do the research properly, if that's what they were going for. I mean, unless there was something unrelated to the current person. I mean, there's some assumptions being made, but probably a pretty safe, pretty strong probability that they were probably trying to target that guy.
Yeah, well, there's no defense for what happened, man.
No defense. Absolutely not. You know, did he have fentanyl in his system? He had some, but it wasn't people. There was a study that they did, and of people who had been arrested and had fentanyl in their system and were released and didn't die, and he had less than the average amount in his system of those people. So he had some in his system, there's no doubt, but it wasn't 300 times the normal limit or some of the stuff that I've seen. And it's just too bad how divisive the whole thing is. You know, it's just unfortunate. I would like to see, you know, I was too, Terry Brown, hey, how you doing? Good to see you. Thanks for being on here.
Well, I think there was some people that don't realize how affected they really are by the normalcy bias.
I haven't talked to you in a long time, Terry. Looks like you got grandkids there. Hope all is well. Anyway, go ahead, Jimmy. What were you saying?
There are some people that are so affected by the normalcy bias, they don't even realize it. When something like that happens, they immediately will try to defend the person that is in power. There are people immediately that didn't even realize what it was in their own mind that made them say, well, the guy was on drugs, or because people like to believe that, you know, well, police don't do that, or human beings don't do that. And it's the normalcy bias. And because people want to believe that something like that just couldn't happen with malicious intent, there was a small group of people that immediately defended the guy. You know, whatever that looked like. It's like this guy that's testifying. What is he saying? You can kneel on a person for 8.5 minutes? Just don't go 9? It's ridiculous, man. The whole defense thing, that, you know, there was a lot of pushback, and I was blown away by it. And when you see it on video, and that's why, again, man, I get this sinking feeling of like,
yeah, if it hadn't been caught on video, would have gotten
with it. Yeah. But how many other times has it happened, and is it going to happen again? That, I don't know.
I mean, the guy was a big man. He was a big guy. And I think that played into it. You know, you had commented that you had a friend, a black friend and big guy, and you were driving and maybe speeding or missed a stoplight or something like that, and how scared he got.
Yeah. Yeah, he was terrified.
You know,
and it was funny because I was like, I'm like getting sassy with the cop and stuff, you know.
This is teenage years, right?
And he was scared to death, and I'd never seen him scared. And at the time, I didn't understand it. You know, I couldn't even process it. And I asked him, I'm like, why are you so freaked out? He's like sweating, and he's like, dude, you don't get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think we can, Caucasian with light skin, can really walk in those shoes. I mean, you know, talk to friends that you have that are black and ask them what its experiences. And if you don't have any friends that are black, then, you know, I remember I went to Promise Keepers. I think, in fact, I think Terry was there in mid 90s, way back in the day. Promise Keepers, an old Christian men's event, went to Twin Cities. And I remember one of the speakers saying that, you know, pastors, saying, you know, if you don't have any black friends, reach out and make some. And I think that's important even to this day, because they say that the most segregated hour in America is Sunday morning at 11 o'clock.
Sure.
You know, so it's, I don't know if we can add much to it. I mean, I think it was the right call. I'm glad that I mean, what's going to happen to him in prison?
Not going to be good
for Derek. Seemed like there was a previous history between the two of them. They both worked at the same spot, and maybe that played into it. I mean, who knows? You know, the guy. Promise Keepers 1996. Jeff, were you there? You were there too? Yeah. Yeah, Terry was there. We were, yeah, absolutely. It was 1996. Do you, Jeff, remember the one speaker saying that we all should try to have black friends, Christian friends? Yeah. Back in the day. Great time at Promise Keepers. It was amazing. Promise Keepers was an amazing thing, and it came back, you know, with inspired and life-changed advice. Kind of missed that movement. I guess Promise Keepers doesn't even really, I don't even know if they still have it. I still have a Promise Keepers baseball hat that I wear sometimes.
What's Promise Keepers?
It's a men's, Christian men's event where men's, men would go for a weekend. I know that, I think they had other things, but they would have like a 3-day event. And, you know, ours was in, Minneapolis at the stadium, just all these men came, and these great speakers came, and inspiring you know, about promise, keeping promises with, you know, being better husbands, better fathers, better men of God, that kind of thing. And, you know, men would come back from that, and their wives would say, "Man, something happened there." Positive, you know, because men would, you know, speaking to how to be better Christian men. A great movement.
That's awesome.
Gary said he went to Promise Keepers several times. I only went that one time. I don't know what happened. Why I didn't go again. I mean, well, we had to go a long ways from South Dakota because, you know, we were still sparsely populated in South Dakota. And so it was a big event. You know, we had to drive all the way to Twin Cities, which was 4 or 5 hours, big bus, you know, a big deal. Versus if you lived in the Twin Cities, you could go and go home and stay in your house, you know, be a lot easier to go if you live close by. So that might've been a reason why we didn't go that as often as maybe if we were closer to the events. But it was definitely, I still remember it. I mean, it was a phenomenal experience, you know. Former football coach of Colorado started Promise Keepers, Jeff says. I did not know that. Thank you for sharing that. Does Jeff, do you know if Promise Keepers is still, finding a lady's purse at Perkins? I kind of remember that a little bit. Did we find the owner of it? I don't recall the final, if we found I remember that vaguely. Because after Promise Keepers, we all went out to eat at Perkins, filling ourselves with pancakes at midnight, you know, really healthy.
That's super good for you.
Oh, really healthy, really good, you know. We called her dad on the phone, Jeff says. Okay. So I think we did get a return to her, if I remember. So good times, good memories. Go ahead.
I'd never heard of Promise Keepers.
Well, I think the organization no longer exists. Then she stormed in and grabbed it from me. I said, "Call your dad," Jeff says. I remember you had it, and you were on a mission to return it to the woman.
No good deed goes unpunished, Jeff.
What was my point? I guess Promise Keepers no longer exists, does it? I mean, you guys that are familiar with it, I don't think it. I've not heard of it in decades. I wonder if it still even exists. That was 1996. I mean, we're talking 25 years ago. You know, time flies.
Man, I saw a really cool thing that resonated with me the other day on YouTube. There's this guy that started a YouTube channel, and it's called Dad, How Do I?
Yeah. He's killing it.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah, he's. I think he's got millions of followers. You know,
he came up without a father, and it's all the things that you would need to learn from your dad.
Yeah, well, it's practical. I guess, like how to fix your toilet, or right stuff. Some of that. How do you do this?
Tie a tie. How to build a deck was on there.
Gary says he doesn't think that Promise Keepers exist anymore, and I believe that's the case. As far as I know, Stand in the Gap, Washington, D.C. was the last event they had, and they went bankrupt after. It's too bad. You know.
Well, GM went bankrupt like 50 times, and they're still in business.
Who did?
Didn't GM go bankrupt a bunch?
Well, they got bailed out by the government. Right. You know, so. Yeah, you're too big to fail, you know. So.
Exactly. Bankruptcy only matters if you're the little guy.
Yeah. So, well, one topic. I mean, if we want to jump a long ways away, unless you got another related topic, Jimmy, that you want to talk about. Hey, Steve, how's it going? Steve Vest is on. I'm joining this music consulting firm to help me with my artist career. And I was filling out the form. They want to find out what I like and what I what type of music I make, that kind of thing. And one of the questions was, what's the best album of all time? And it makes you think. I'm going to date my, I came up with Pet Sounds by Beach Boys. And second would be Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles. And you can, you had a couple others. What were yours?
My favorite Beatles album, I like Abbey Road a little bit more than Sgt. Pepper's. But my favorite album is probably Axis Bold as Love from Hendrix. I think it's a masterpiece. And Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore is way, way up there. Pet Sounds is right up there for me, too. In fact, I love, there's a YouTube channel that plays some of these albums without the vocals. And it's unbelievable how good the freaking music sounds, dude. It's like you couldn't grab that reverb anymore. If you listen, especially Pet Sounds is at the top of the heap, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've heard some of that. Brian Wilson, I mean, and he was only like 20, 21 or two. I mean, he was just a young, how did he know that? He hadn't been taught that. He just, that was just in his, he just was born with that.
It's one of those things that happens time and time and time and time again in art, to where the people that innovate the most, or more times than not, are the people that don't know the rules. And when you don't know the rules, you're just creating. And people like to think that Brian Wilson had this huge wealth of musical theory knowledge, and that's not true. He just had an incredible ear.
He did. He did. And he was deaf in one ear. Oh. So it was just one ear. He had an incredible one ear.
That ear did the work of thousands of ears.
Yeah, and then, well, unfortunately, as happens to many great creatives, he couldn't handle the stress. And after Pet Sounds, actually, according to the story, he and the Beatles were greatly influenced, and he was influenced by Rubber Soul, and he had to outdo Rubber Soul. And unfortunately, he was the only one writing and producing, and he was competing against basically five people, all four Beatles and George Martin. And that was an unfair advantage. And so they came out with Rubber Soul. He listened to that, and he came out with Pet Sounds. And McCartney and Lennon listened to Pet Sounds, and they came out with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And Brian Wilson said, I got to beat that. And he tried to make Smile, and he had a nervous breakdown. And went crazy, basically, when he tried to make Smile. And so a little bit of one-upmanship. They inspired each other.
Well, you got to give him an E for effort. He fought the good fight hanging in with the Beatles.
He did. He just susceptible. I mean, very fragile, I think. And then his cousin, Mike Love, has sued him numerous times. And somehow Mike Love ended up with the name, Beach Boys name. And now if you go see the Beach Boys, it's Mike Love and one of the other earlier guys. I can't remember his name. Wow. Terry says there's a Promise Keepers event July 16th through 17th, 2021. Oh my gosh. AT&T Stadium. What stadium? What city is that? Is that the Twin Cities? I don't know where that is. Is a AT&T Stadium? That must be Twin Cities. That's a possibility. It would be nostalgic. Maybe we'll communicate about it later.
I think it's isn't that Texas?
Is it AT&T Stadium? Dallas. Okay, Dallas. Thank you, Terry. Yeah, I mean, at this point in time, we could all fly to Dallas. That'd be fun. Maybe we should. I'll consider that. Anyway, what were we talking about? We were talking about
Mike Love.
Mike Love, yeah. And then Mike Love's went crazy when they got inducted in the Hall of Fame. And you can watch it on YouTube. He had a horrible speech where he trashed everybody from the stage. And I think it was either Bob Dylan or the guy came next, says, thank God he didn't mention me. Or maybe it was Elton John. Somebody came back and said, thank God he didn't mention me. He trashed Mick Jagger. And
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've never seen that? When they were inducted, he said, you guys can't do what we do. We do 200 gigs a year and try to do what we do. I think he trashed the Beatles and Mick Jagger, just a bunch of, you know, senior when they got inducted. Yeah, he's crazy. He's a nut. But he somehow came up with a name, what came up with the ownership of the Beach Boys name. And so, I mean, they're still touring. And he sang lead on most of their songs. 50th anniversary, when they had the 50th anniversary, which was early, like 2012. And Brian and El Jardine and the remaining guys. Now, the other two Wilson brothers have died. Dennis died. He was drunk and swimming around his yacht, and he drowned. And then Carl died of disease. I don't remember what disease. Cancer, the youngest brother. And so Brian, there were three brothers. And then Mike was the cousin. And then there were a few others that filled in. El Jardine, I think, was a founding member. And I can't remember the other name. The remaining ones got back together and toured for about 6 months. And they released a song called That's Why God Made Radio, which Brian had written. Maybe you heard that, maybe you didn't. It got some radio play. And then Mike said, that's enough, no more, you guys go home. And Brian was very, very upset because he said, man, we're having so much fun. How come we can't keep going? Why are you firing us? It was a big to-do. Mike Love continued to be the jerk that he is.
Brian Wilson got fired from the Beach Boys?
Yeah.
Craziest thing I've ever heard, dude.
That's 2012. You look it up. Or the 50th anniversary, which I think was...
No, I believe you.
2013, 2012, roughly in there. When they came out with their 50th anniversary album, you know, they're all in their 70s, you know, but early 70s, I think, maybe late 60s. Mike Love's a complete jerk. His cousin, the guy that plays for Cleveland Cavaliers,
Kevin Love.
Kevin Love, yeah, he's related. That's his nephew, I should say, not cousin, nephew. He's related to Kevin Love. Are they related to each other? But anyhow, a little Beach Boys trivia, because I love the Beach Boys, the evocative. And he didn't know any different. He put instruments together that didn't belong together, that nobody else had put together, because he didn't know any different. You know? Bass harmonica. I mean, who uses a bass? I mean, what is even, I didn't even know there is such a thing. On Pet Sounds, he used bass harmonica and just weird stuff.
That stuff's really hard to sing too, man. Not just like
strange. Tell the story of, yeah, when you got called to do a gig, and tell that story.
It was, I do a lot of weddings, perform at weddings, and I will always give the wedding couple, you know, the option to choose the songs, and it costs a little bit more money. And this particular wedding, they had picked, it was all songs I wasn't familiar with. And I looked at them and I thought, these are all easy, you know, because I knew they were all three or four chords, which they really were. So I kind of put it off and started working on the tunes the week of the wedding. And one of the tunes was God Only Knows from the Beatles, or the Beach Boys, sorry. And it took me forever, dude, to get the interval, because I believe he starts singing on a
sixth.
It's a sixth, yeah. And to play the major chord and start singing on the sixth note, and just the interval of it was really, really tough for me to grab, because I'd never done that before. And then, you know, after I had gotten through the performance, I went back and started digging more, and it's like all those songs are like that. They're all that complex.
Yeah, it's just amazing
well, stuff. Man, I don't think that he was composing them from a vocal perspective. I think he was composing them on a piano.
Well, he was. All the parts, he sang all the parts for both the instruments. He had them in his head. I mean, he couldn't read music, but like he would go over to the oboe player or whatever. I mean, he had odd instruments in there and we'd sing. He couldn't write out the score, but he would sing their part to them. And they had to reproduce it from hearing it. You know, he's saying, well, I want you to play boom, 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 or whatever it would be, whatever part. And he would go to each. Now, these are all pro musicians. These are the Wrecking Crew, L.A., you know, some of the best musicians in the history of recorded music, the Wrecking Crew out of L.A. And he would sing their part to them because he couldn't write it out. And then they would have to play it back. You know, a really weird kind of a deal for them. We used to put the sheet music up and playing to the sheet music. Instead, they got to listen to this guy sing it to him. And then as far as the vocal parts, there were some doo-wop groups that were the four that were really popular that he idolized. And a producer talks about when he was still a teenager and called him in and asked him for a really difficult. He said, ask me any song by, I can't remember the name of the group. But it was a popular group from the 50s that were like a four-part harmony. And Brian said, ask me any song. And the guy picked the most difficult song that this group was well known for. And Brian could sing all the parts, all the four-part harmony. Exactly. He had it in his head. So that was the level. I mean, he would sing the parts to the guys in the Beach Boys. I'm talking about the vocal parts. And he would say, well, this is your part, and this is your part. He couldn't write it out, but he could sing it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he literally went crazy, I would say, because when he tried to do Smile, there was a part that had to do with fire. He was doing like elements, fire and earth and whatever. And he... when they did that part, he wanted them to all put on fireman helmets, and he had to light a fire in the studio so that they could get the feel, and it had sirens go off. He had to get the feel of a real fire. He was trying to duplicate that kind of feel, and he just went off the deep end. That's when they started saying, man, this guy's crazy. And so the first song off of Smile was Good Vibrations, which he did get finished, and he spent $70,000 producing that, which was an unheard of sum. And it did become a hit, Good Vibrations, but that's all he got finished really from Smile, his project. So anyway, people are probably eyes glazed over talking about Beach Boys, but
Beach Boys were awesome.
You know. So what did you like about Axis Bold as Love? I mean, tell us about that. Why you think that's a candidate for the best album of all time?
It's the compositions. I mean, it's everything you were just talking about with Brian Wilson, but done with guitar. There are layers upon layers upon layers.
A lot of overdubs.
Yeah, and it's all there. It's all there. I think it's more far-reaching sonically than any other album that an artist has recorded. You have really, really heavy stuff like Little Miss Lover and the intro EXP, which is very, very heavy. Then you have these beautiful ballads like Axis Bold as Love and Little Wing, Up from the Skies. It's just, I think it's the most, the compositions are all stunningly beautiful. And it has everything. It's the only album that I can think of that I've ever heard that has beautiful songs, really, really heavy songs, really bluesy influence. Just, I mean, it's all over the map. There's more content there in that album, in my opinion, musically, than any other album I've ever heard.
I'll have to revisit that with your, I mean, I've certainly, I had it, I played it a lot, and I played all four of his catalog, really. And so I didn't really break them up between, because I put them in my player. I changed.
A great story with Hendrix is when he was contacted by a label before the album Are You Experienced. He was playing Hey Joe live in a bunch of covers, and he didn't write Hey Joe. Some other guy wrote Hey Joe.
Right. That's a cover song. Yeah.
The label approached him and said, how many songs do you have? And he lied and he shot some big number at him. And they were like, okay, we'll get you in the studio. He wrote, Are You Experienced? He wrote that entire album in the studio. And there's like 20 songs on it. He was bluffing, man. Yeah, Hendrix was, you know, that was the inception of him becoming a songwriter, was Are You Experienced? It's incredible to me that he did that under the gun with no real, you know, no songwriter history at all.
I didn't know that. Aspect of it.
And there's so many layers on Axis, man. There's just layers upon it.
Well, how about then later? What was the one that was posthumously released? Was Ladyland?
Yeah, he only really did three albums. We've heard tons of stuff, but he intended for us to hear three
albums. Ladyland, what's that the name of it? Ladyland?
Electric Ladyland.
Electric Ladyland, yeah. Now that was cobbled together. It wasn't really as that he wanted it to be, you feel?
Well, I mean, he released it as a studio.
But he wasn't. He already passed when it got released, didn't he?
And drugs have gotten hold of him and whatnot.
True. Yeah, he had
Coldest Love was his greatest effort. And his composition, man.
Well, you're not including the live one. The four, if you include the live one with Machine Gun on it.
Yeah, Band of Gypsies.
Yeah.
It's a heavy, heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Billy Cox, man. I got to meet Billy Cox one time. He's from Louisville. Those albums are crazy heavy. I wish I would give anything if those Band of Gypsies out, if the Band of Gypsy album would have been recorded with Mitch Mitchell on drums instead of Buddy Miles. I'd give anything to have heard that, because that was the band he ended up with at the very end. But they didn't have enough time. They were working on an album called Cry of Love, and that's when Hendrix died. But when he had Billy Cox on bass and Mitch on drums there, then that was the band. That's when he was really, really moving the ball.
Oh, because, well, Neil Gallagher, wasn't that his name? Neil. Well, I know it was Neil. It was Gallagher, wasn't it?
Yeah, Noel Gallagher.
Noel Gallagher. Okay.
Yeah.
He was actually a guitar player, and I got...
Based like a guitar player.
He wanted to be a guitar player, and he probably had some ideas that he was at the level of Hendrix, but he was relegated to playing bass, and I got a feeling that he didn't really care for that much.
Yeah.
Whereas Buddy Miles was, and that was on the first two, wasn't that was, was he on Axis Bold as Love?
Noel was on all three of the studio albums.
Yeah.
That was Noel, except for certain tracks where it was Hendrix. Like Hendrix played bass on All Along the Watchtower. And there's some tracks Hendrix played drums on too.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I knew he played bass on some. And I couldn't have told you which ones, but I knew he played bass on some.
Figuring out exactly which ones he played drums on is impossible, but he did play drums on some of those tracks. It's kind of like figuring out who played drums on all the tracks on the White Album. Nobody even knows.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they just did it. They probably got confused. We like that take best.
Well, what else? What else you got, Jimmy?
That's how it works in the studio, man. You know, you never know. You're cobbling stuff together.
Well, what recent within the last 20 years album would you choose? If you had to choose something in the last 25 years, 30 years, roughly. What's that?
Oh, man. The Black Keys, The Rubber Factory.
Ah.
That's a great album. It's a great blues album. But I don't really listen to a lot of new stuff. And maybe that's wrong, but I just don't. I just gravitate so hard towards the older music. The direction, whereas everybody else is waiting for new stuff to come out, I'm going the other way and looking for older stuff that I haven't dug up yet, you know.
Well, for recent stuff, mine would be Sound and Color by Alabama Shakes.
Yeah.
That won... a ton of won Grammys. It was out, I think, in 2017, 2018. Let me just quick look. The producer on that is Blake Mills. He's a young gun, early 30s guitar player, producer from LA. He's still in his early 30s. And I love what he did on that album. That's a very retro sound.
It never went anywhere, man.
The album?
No, just that sound.
Oh, right. Yeah, it never went anywhere. Right. Yeah.
Like the blues, man. Is, you know, people say, oh, the blues, maybe it never went anywhere.
Never left. Yeah. Yeah.
Like when I was in school, the Black Crowes album, and everybody said that it was a retro thing. It was just, that never left. Oh, my dog just rattled the whole world.
Is that Jake?
Yeah.
Jake is, I saw Jake for the first time, and I don't know how many weeks, I was shocked. Jake, I could lift him with one hand, and now Jake is a monster. Yeah, see if you can see those. He's got two colored eyes. He's got, oh man, get him on the camera. He's
moving. Yeah, he's not having it, man.
He doesn't want to be on the camera. He's got like a really light eye and a really dark eye.
Yeah. Heinz 57, man. He's Heinz 57 and a half.
And he's not very bright. And clumsy. But very affectionate.
He's very sweet.
Yeah. But he confuses. I mean, he wanted to lick me and he bit my ear. That's not affection, Jake. Come on.
He's special. Jake's a little touched, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a dog. I mean, I love dogs, but when I go running, you know, people out there with their dogs, I always stop and pet their dogs. But it's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of maintenance. Take it to the vet, feed it, water it, you know, let it out, you know, let it in. I'm selfish, I guess.
Yeah, it's just like having another kid.
You know, but you have two dogs and, well, I didn't see the one cat. I just saw, do you still have two cats?
No, my mom has one of them now.
Oh, the older one.
Chloe.
Chloe, yeah.
Yeah, Chloe lives with mom now.
Okay.
We had to dumb things down a little bit, so we got Jake. They're getting too smart as a collective.
All right. Well, yeah, we're getting close to our time. What, you got any other words of wisdom there, big guy?
No, I'm
big shooter.
Big shooter.
Oh, Jake is yeah, that was a guy who worked for me. And ex-colony guy, Hooderite. It's a big shooter. So ever since 25 years, I'm still using that all the time. How you doing, you big shooter? All right. Rambling enough. Thank you for those of you who stayed with us, and hope you enjoyed our content. You know, let us know what you'd like us to talk about. We just kind of rambled this time. We've had a couple times where we had a pre-established subject.
We've been busy. We had to wing it today.
Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for staying with us. And we'll see you next time.
Peace.